Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Today, it's time for another Bob and Richard Answer Their Mailbag show. Today, though, we have a twist. Gambling with an Edge has been on the air for 10 years, with our first show Thursday, February 4th, 2011. Frank Nealon and I interviewed Beth Raymer about her book, Lay the Favorite, and Michael Koenig about his book called Smart Money. Pretty good way to start the show. Back then, it was a half-hour live radio show. Today, Richard and I will take a look down memory lane at some of our favorite things about the show. Frank was the co-host for 6 months. He and I had different visions of what the show should be about, and he was replaced by Richard. I'm glad Frank helped me get the show started, but so far as I was concerned, Richard was the ultimate upgrade. Richard was living north of Los Angeles at the time and was commuting weekly to do the show, which had to be tedious. After a year, he asked me to find another co-host. He loved doing the show, but hated the commute. So I reached out to Michael Shackelford, and he did it for about a year. And then he found he was too busy to continue. But by this time, Richard had moved to Las Vegas. He thankfully agreed to begin co-hosting again, and he's been with us ever since. The radio station, KLAS 1230 AM in Las Vegas, folded after a while. They sold out to another company that also went bankrupt. These were stations where we paid them $800 a month or so for the privilege of hosting the show on their platform. We decided to save the money and start podcasting. Originally, it was done in a room off of the kitchen of Richard's home. Often it was done just by telephone from wherever we were. Eventually, we set up a studio in the offices of Las Vegas Advisor, right across the hall from Anthony Curtis. Over the last 10 months, we've been socially distancing, and all the episodes have been created by tape or Skype. So that's the overall picture of how the show's gone. Richard, what are some of your favorite shows and episodes?
You know, the ones that stick out to me, I love the two episodes with Billy Baxter. I could listen to, you know, guys like him tell stories about the old days forever. So I love those episodes.
He's still sharp enough to remember the old days, and it comes out well. Some of the other old-timers are losing it, which our turn will come. Yeah. But Billy was still a good conversationalist.
Well, yeah, he's a good storyteller. In addition to having, you know, still being a sharp memory, he's a really good storyteller.
Yes.
Another episode that really stood out to me is the Kelly Sun episode.
Yes.
Talking about Phil Ivey and, you know, that was a – and really, to me, some of the most interesting parts of that episode were not about Phil Ivey and that whole incident, but really about her story and, you know, and her boyfriend, Eddie, who we would love to get on the show, but he has so far declined. But, you know, that's a really interesting episode to me, too.
One of the nice things about that episode was Lori Chang was on it. And Lori's had a couple of standalones, and Lori sparkles on the air. She is a really, really fun guest to have. One of my all-time favorites was one of the early ones when it was still on radio, still done live, and Tommy Hyland decided he wanted to be a guest, and he wanted call-ins from the audience. Now, we had a very small audience at that point, numbering in the hundreds, maybe, if we counted double, if there were two people in the room. And the first call-in was something like, what are the rules for surrendering? And so Tommy went through them, and then they were happy with it, so they hung up. And so there wasn't another caller until he got one that said, asking Tommy about how come he ate all the donuts at the Las Vegas Hilton, that they used to have donuts every morning, every Sunday morning for the football games, and Tommy ate all the donuts, and how come all the donuts were eaten? And Tommy's going, I didn't eat all the donuts. Now, I didn't recognize the name, but since then I've gotten to know Michael, who was Tommy's son, and it was definitely Michael, and Tommy must have recognized the voice right away. But watching Tommy get flustered saying he didn't eat the donuts was really cool.
You know, we did a show, too, that was interesting, where we had both Tommy Hyland and John Chang on together talking about running big teams.
The different ways to do it, yes.
Yeah, that was an interesting episode as well.
And a couple of our guests have been personal heroes of mine. One of my heroes who helped me get started was Stanford Wong, who I decided to try to become nearly as good as him. I don't know that I ever reached it, but being able to write about gambling, he was one of my early heroes. James Holzhauer, who was on Jeopardy a few years ago and breaking records, was sitting 4 feet across the table from us, and I was just a big Jeopardy fan and a big Holzhauer fan, and I was kind of starstruck, and that was pretty cool.
Well, and Ed Thorpe.
Ed Thorpe is a huge hero. And
yeah, for me too.
And so not so much that show. I have this other Ed Thorpe story that I always can share, that I've shared a couple times on the air, that's always cool. All right, so hopefully we'll make – I guess – and we have to mention Bob Nersessian. Bob Nersessian has been a guest 20-some times. I don't have the number.
Definitely the most frequent guest.
Well, maybe Anthony Curtis would be in the running for that. But Bob gets really excited about things, and he's very passionate about things. And so he'll pound the table and bounce off the ceiling. And I learn a lot in the there are times that we would go out after the show when it was done in the studio and have a drink. And he just philosophizes about a lot of things and learned a lot from that man. Very much enjoy those episodes.
It's frustrating because – often he can't talk about the cases until they're done, and it takes years for them to get done. So we would be having him on even more if there were things that we could be talking about.
Yeah, he's good. All right, first question. How hard is it to make money at live poker games? Are gamblers at the poker table as bad as gamblers at the blackjack tables in Atlantic City? Or will I have to fight tooth and nail for each dollar I win? You want to handle this one first?
Sure. Well, I will go back to, my interview with Tommy Hyland's, which is more than 20 years old, but I think Tommy was spot on. He said, to make $50 an hour playing poker, you have to be quite good. And to make $50 an hour at blackjack is nothing. So I think it is much harder to make money at poker than it is at blackjack, even today. It may be more so today because the level of the average poker player has gotten much better. And to try to make money online playing poker is really hard. There are still a lot of drunk idiots in the 1-2 no limit games and things in Las Vegas, but I think blackjack is an easier way to make money than poker.
Yeah, and just the nature of poker, it's always a fight. Good. Next question. With the El Dorado buyout of his local property, now of Caesars, they matched him to 7 stars. He wants to know what the 7-star benefits are for the others in that situation. And my advice is to check out the 7starsinsider.com site. This is a monthly newsletter, and all the old newsletters are out there. It's a publisher's Daryl McEwen, who's been on the show a few times. He's not a Caesars employee. He's not an AP, but he does write clearly about the nuts and bolts of the slot club and how it differs at various locations. It's a far too complicated club for us to give just a few highlights here and do justice to it. And with the new owners, you know it's going to change. We just don't know in what areas they're going to change yet. Next question. You're at a property where you're a regular, and you see a small sum of cash or a slot ticket on the ground. Do you pick it up? You just take the cash? Do you leave it for somebody else to snag? Richard.
Boy, I mean, first of all, there's a difference, I think, between cash and a slot ticket. If it was cash, I don't see how I could possibly walk past it without picking it up. Depending on where you are, things are different, right? So there was somebody arrested for picking up a slot ticket in Colorado. And I think it may be illegal in Colorado, but then there are other places where the woman got the 6-figure settlement for getting arrested for taking a nickel out of a slot machine. So it really depends on the jurisdiction, but, for me, if it was cash, I'm going to pick it up. If it's a slot ticket, I probably would not. Or if I did, I might turn it in. That's what I would do.
My answer is similar, but not quite the same. I'll call security over and tell them and let them deal with it. Absolutely not take the money. Everything's on camera these days. If I'm a regular, they know exactly who I am because I will have hit W2Gs there, and I have to show ID for that. So I'm always assuming that any place where I'm welcome to play always has somebody in the management who thinks it's not a good idea to deal to me, and I don't want to provide them any more information. Now, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, where I was really struggling to make it, I would have picked it up really, really quickly. There was a survival kind of instinct of I would work really hard so I didn't have to go get a job. And I wasn't really worried about being well-known or anything like that. Today, no way.
What about if it was cash? Would you still call and give it to security?
Are we talking about green cash? Or are we talking about nickels?
Yeah, you see a $10 bill on the floor.
I have picked that up. If it's a but I have seen a wad and picked it up, held it in my hand, held it out in front, and called for security. Somebody lost that. Somebody's going to report it. And I'm too well known. I'm not going to.
I get that. Yeah, that's. And especially like if it was a wallet, I mean, there's no way I'm going to take that. I'm going to turn it in. And.
Yeah. So if I do pick it up, I'm going to hold it out in front of me.
You're right, so the camera can see you're not trying to steal it.
Yeah, so that I'm not going through it, not going, I'm not trying to do anything. Next question. somebody lives in Europe and wants to come play in the United States. He wants to know if he has to pay taxes, how can he avoid paying taxes? And my suggestion is lose every time, and then you can avoid paying the taxes. But if you win, there are going to be taxes. Some games, like video poker and slots, they collect your ID on $1,200 and higher jackpots, and some non-U.S. players have an extra 30% withheld, depending on the treaty between the United States and that country. Games like blackjack do not normally withhold taxes and do not normally collect the information unless it's a big cash out. You still owe money on your winnings in that game, but tax evasion, which is strictly illegal, is fairly common in certain games. And if you think Richard and I are going to spend a show telling you how you can illegally evade taxes, you're listening to the wrong podcast. Anything to add?
No.
Somebody's considering team play. Can you tell me the pros and cons? You've done this, Richard.
Oh, well, that's a very short subject. I mean, no, I'm being facetious. For me, there are a lot of pros. Number one, if you're sharing a bankroll, you can bet more money, which means you're all winning more money per hour. Number two, you're getting in more hours if your results are being shared, so your losing streaks get smoothed out a lot more. And if you're on the road together, you aren't spending your time alone in a hotel room with no one to talk to, especially during times when you're losing. So, you know, those are some of the benefits. Some of the disadvantages, the main one is you have to worry about other players skimming or not being competent. You know, those are the major disadvantages to me.
Yep, that's about it. Somebody wants to know if I'm a winner or loser at Dotties. Not sure why you want to know, but yeah, I'm ahead there. You know, and do they want to? They want to know if Dotties can bar me, and the answer is of course. Their Nevada casinos can bar virtually anybody for any reason that isn't constitutionally protected, such as skin color and race and things like that. Dotties continues to get tighter. Dotties was one of the initial sponsors of this show. They lasted 3 months, and then they decided I was telling people too much, and they didn't want people told that. So, but they know who I am, and they still allow me to play. But the games keep getting tighter, and the slot club keeps removing this benefit and that one. I'm pretty sure I still have a small edge, and there are things about it that I like, but it's not nearly as good as it used to be. Somebody says he knows 9-6 jacks are better and wants to play 9-6 bonus poker deluxe because of the higher return and the higher level of excitement. What's the best place to learn the game? Best way to learn the game? For those who aren't video poker players, there's two differences in the games. One is jacks are better, gives you double money on two pair, whereas bonus poker deluxe gives you single money. And the other difference is jacks are better pays 25 for one for all four of a kinds. Bonus poker deluxe pays 80 for one. So the higher variance has to do with you get two pair all the time. like one in every 10 hands or so. You get four of a kinds every 400 hands or so. And so much of the return is based on the four of a kinds. Now, first step is to get a good strategy. Video Poker for Winners creates one, has one. The free strategy may be found at wizardofodds.com. It's not as user-friendly as the one on Video Poker for Winners, but it's accurate and it's free, and those are hard things to compete with. Once you have a strategy, you need to practice on a computer until you're proficient. Unless you have a computer telling you when you make a mistake, it is likely that you do not understand those lines in the strategy that you thought you did, but you really don't. And that's it. Get a strategy and practice. Next question. Do you have any podcasts that discuss what to do with cash when you win and accumulate it? For example, how to and where to safely store it? Is it a bad idea to just deposit cash directly into your bank account? Things about that. We've discussed these things a number of times. Insofar as depositing it regularly, it's probably not a good idea. The most, assuming we're talking about big sums, most banks are not used to a gambler's lifestyles where you might want to deposit a large sum of cash and then withdraw it regularly. Once they decide you're a gambler, some are not really happy with that profession. So you need another place to store it, so which means safe somewhere or safety deposit boxes in several casinos. If you are well known and have a safe, you're giving your address every time you have a W-2G. So I don't keep a lot of money at my house. I have other places because people know where I live, and I don't want to be a target.
I'd like to say I want to reiterate what Bob said about banks. They, especially Chase and Wells Fargo, they bar players just the way casinos do, and if you deposit and withdraw large amounts of cash, your bank is going to tell you we don't want your action anymore. So it is better to go make one deposit of $100,000 in cash than five $20,000 deposits. The other thing is, one of the things I think that is important is that if you are a winning player and are accumulating cash, you want to get it into the system. You want to be able to have that money working for you by putting it into some kinds of investments, the excess cash that you don't need to play. So you want to get it into the bank. You want to get it into investments and pay taxes on it. One way to do that, one thing that makes it easier is if you can get a casino to give you a check. So if you can accumulate, it depends on what game you're playing, you know, how you're winning your money. So for some players, that's easier than others. But for a video poker player, you hit a $20,000 royal, you ask for a check instead of cash. And then it's very easy to just deposit it in your bank. But I think it's important that you get the money into the system so that you can invest it and use it to make even more money.
I agree. I just had a flash of somebody who's playing unrated, and they go to the cage and says, I'm not going to tell you what my name is, but I want to check.
Right. But that player might be able to just go down and sit in the poker room and, you know, end up cashing out a lot of chips and just ask them for a check. or get their money in action in the sports book and have a lot of sports tickets and that they want to cash and have them, you know, turned into a check.
Okay, good. We had two questions about the Video Poker Hall of Fame. They wanted to know, where is it? And somebody else says he hasn't heard of anybody else being in the Video Poker Hall of Fame other than Bob Dancer. So is it really real, and who else is in there? So one of those questions was friendlier than the other. I don't believe that it's in a physical place. It was established by the VP Free website, which is run by Tom Sims. And periodically, there are elections for inclusion. I personally feel that Liam W. Daly deserves to be selected. He was my co-author on a number of products and came up with a lot of innovations. But his widow asked me not to promote his inclusion, so I haven't. Other members include Dan Paymar, who died fairly recently. Skip Hughes, who died some time ago. Gene Scott. Dean Zamzow, who invented the Wynn Poker software. And Ernie Moody, who invented the Triple Play series of games, along with owns videopoker.com. Somebody wants to know about, in the Boyd group, the Be Connected Slot Club, how many dollars does it take? Playing video poker gives you a tier credit. And they can't get a straight answer. And there's a couple of different things. It's done by theoretical. So if you're playing a 99.7% game, which they have a few of, you get very, very, very few tier credits. It might take $80 to earn one tier credit. If you're playing a 95% game, well, you get tier credits up your yin-yang. So however many, so there's that factor. The other thing is you need a certain minimum every year before they start counting, before you get multipliers. So I think it's 750 tier credits a year before you're eligible to get double points, or sometimes they have 10 times points or something like that. You'll get no point multipliers at all until you get up to at least 750 tier credits. Now, if you earned it last year, well, then you'll get it all of this year too. But if you don't earn it again this year, you will have to start over again, and so it takes a while. If you're playing the good games, it takes almost forever. Occasionally, the best way to do it, the most profitable way to do it, is to play progressives when you can find them high enough. Then that'll give you a good rate of progressives on a game that is positive, but those don't happen all the time. Do you have anything to add, Richard?
Nope.
All right. Somebody wants to know if he should have gotten surveillance involved if the dealer skips by when you want him to hit your A7 versus a 10. Does that cause any special reaction by the pit or anybody else? Richard.
It's not worth your time. You know, I mean, you might call the pit boss over because maybe he'll, you know, offer you a push on the hand or something. I don't know. But getting surveillance involved? No, it's just not worth the hassle. Like, time is money. You want more hands per hour. Just move on, but make sure the dealer knows, hey, sometimes I hit that. So, you know, slow down.
I actually had a case where I probably was a fledgling AP on a coupon hustling basis, when I my first Vegas trips were as at the Riviera and other places where you play so many hours for nickels and dimes and they give you particular benefits. And so that was how I survived early when I came to Vegas. So I got some free coupons, which you could play any number of them that you had, which if you get a six-card Charlie, you got $50. In other words, if maybe it was five cards, I don't remember. But some tough tan to get. But even if they had $2 tables and you could get this five cards of less than 21 or 21 or less, you got paid $50. So this was good because, like, you know, you'd hit an 18, a hard 18, and if you had, you needed one more card or something like this. And sometimes, so I had just a shitload of these coupons, and the dealer is used to playing hands, and she refused to give me a card on an 18. She goes, nobody hits an 18. You can't do that. I'm just going on to the next player, and she would go on. And so when I finally called over the pit, and I said, hey, she's not letting me play the hands. Their solution is, all right, we'll give you this one. No, you know, do you want a card or not? You know, but she just gave a three that should have been mine. And he goes, do you want a card or not? So I said yes, and fortunately I hit it, and they said no more coupons. So there was a penalty there to doing it. Better, I suppose, would have been to leave the table and come back when a different dealer was there. But I did not come up with that solution until later. Somebody wants to play blackjack tournaments. What's the best way to learn how to do it? Stanford Wong has a book. Who else?
Ken. Blackjackinfo.com. Ken. God, I can't think of his last name right now.
Yeah, I understand. That's where I'm at. Okay. So there are books out there on tournaments. So if you look up, blackjack tournaments, Ken Smith.
Yes. Thank you. Jeez.
They both have books on how to do it. And I suspect on the various blackjack forums, there's a section that deals with tournaments. I don't know. I'm not on those forums, but I would suspect that's true. Is that true, Richard?
It certainly used to be. I haven't been on the forums in a long time, so but it certainly used to be.
All right. Next person wants to get the software that's used by Michael Shackelford, Elliot Jacobson, and James Grosjean to figure out how a game is beatable and how to do it. And my answer is good luck with that.
It's very simple. It's really very simple. Just, you know, go get a master's or a PhD in math and write your own software. That's what they do.
That's what they did. So it's all individually created. Grosjean has floated the idea that someday he's going to make his software available to the public, and I will believe that when I see it. Although, actually, at the last Blackjack Ball, which was a year ago, and it won't happen again for another year anyway, the winner was given a beta version of that software. And so for the right player, that was just a tremendously useful a bit of information to have a computer and be able to use it. So it was won by Arnold Snyder, who won the the skills contest, and Arnold certainly would know the situations to use that in. I don't know how computer savvy Arnold is, but it would have been a hell of a gift.
We'll have to ask him about that. Arnold will be on probably in, I don't know, a month or two. He's got a new book coming out, so once the book is ready to be launched, we will have him on the show.
For sure. Blackjack Discord. Somebody wants to know how you find it.
Well, I will put a link in the show notes again. It's been there many times. I believe the website is Blackjack the Discord. But whatever it is, I will look it up and we will put a link in the show notes. But the other thing is, I would say, don't you know any other blackjack players that are on the Discord? Like, have you tried asking your friends? Now, I guess there are some people who are new to blackjack and maybe they haven't met any other players yet. So, as I say, I will put the link in the show notes.
There is Discord software, which is good for playing games and stuff like that. Is this at all related to that, or is it just a coincidence that they both have the word Discord in it?
No, no, it's the same software. So Discord is a communication software where if you're a video game player, esports, those kind of things, you can talk to each other while you're playing any particular game. And Rymo, who's been on our show, set up his own channel on there. Anybody can set up a channel on Discord to talk about anything they want to talk about. So he set one up for blackjack players.
Very good. So before we get back to
By the way, Bob, while we're on the subject of Blackjack the Discord, you have been trending recently because there have been some readings with some very talented voice actors from your book, Sex, Lies, and Video Poker. And so you may see a spike in sales.
I find this incredibly strange.
It's been very popular.
A few days ago, my comment was, of all the top 10,000 things I was predicting that I would hear today, that was not on the list. But good. I'm glad they enjoy it. It was fun to write. And it's racy. And if they like that, they're going to love more Sex, Lies, and Video Poker. We're going to take a brief commercial break. South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. The promotion in February is called Free Play with a Kicker. It's for players who already receive free play there. They pick up their normal amount Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday. And if they do, they'll receive the same amount on the following Friday or Saturday. Make all eight of these pickups on Monday, March 1st, and you receive a double-sized free play pickup. So there are 9 days to pick up free play instead of 4. And it's the amount of 10 times the individual rather than 4 times. So if your normal was $50, you're going to get $500 instead of $200. If your normal was $10, you'll get $100 instead of $40. On President's Day, there's a $300,000 hot seat promotion every 3 minutes between 8 a.m. and midnight. Some player with his card inserted and having played at least $1 in the previous minute earns $100 in free play. At predicted.org, there's a market where you can play small bets on the occurrence of various political events, mostly but not entirely in the United States. Some of the markets trending now are exactly how the vote's going to be for impeachment in the Senate, about who the will various cabinet members be passed by the Senate? When will various people enter the election for 2024 by a certain date. Our listeners receive a deposit match up to $20 at predicted.org/promo/edge. BlackjackApprenticeship.com is an excellent site for those of you who wish to be successful at counting cards at blackjack. They post free videos all the time at YouTube. If you like those and find you can learn from them, there's a lot more behind the pay site. VideoPoker.com is the best place to practice lots of different games. If you sign up for the gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the games. The game of the week is Wheel Poker Deluxe. This is a game where you pay an extra 5 coins per game, meaning triple play costs 20 coins, 5 play costs 30 coins, 10 play 55 coins. And the bonuses come on dealt trips, full houses, and quads. Slightly different for Deuces Wild variations. If you get one of the bonus, you spin the wheel. When the wheel spins, it lands on a drawing opportunity. Sometimes it's 100 play, 4-door flush. Sometimes it's 10 play with a pair of aces. Sometimes it's triple play, 4-door royal, etc. There is no skill involved in the hold for the bonus, and the bonus is earned on the draw, meaning that if you know the strategy to the base game, you know the strategy for the Wheel Poker Deluxe version. It adds a bit of EV with a bit of variance. Surprisingly, the triple play version always pays a bit more than the 5-play version. For example, in 9-6 double-double bonus, the base game is 98.98%. The 5-play version is 99.31%, and the triple play version is 99.47%. We're going to have one more question. Does anyone have any experience with Money Clip or something like it? It seems like it would save time because you don't have to wait for hand pay. Well, Money Clip is one of several different ways casinos can pay you. The high limit rooms in various casinos look for ways to speed up the game, to get rid of the paperwork, to have you sign the W2Gs early, and you just sign it once, and then it does automatically, and if you hit a hand pay, it automatically records, and you just keep going. Different casinos are set up in different ways. If a casino is set up with Money Clip, they can use that. There's just so many different products out there. Just depends on what that casino has. All right. At the end of our show, we usually have a recommended. Now, Richard always has a recommended, and I'm going to surprise him today by having one myself. Hold on to your seat, Richard.
Yeah.
And the book is actually a novel called Super Con by James Swain, S-W-A-I-N. Swain writes a whole lot of gambling books. Usually his character, named Mickey Valentine, discovers cheaters, works for casinos, and figures out who the cheaters are. In this particular one, all the characters are Las Vegas cheaters at all kinds of games. They're going to score big, and their goal is to fix the Super Bowl. And so they go over how they're going to do it. Now, but all through the books are various kinds of cons that they do. Most I have heard of. Some I don't think will work. Some are new. Mostly this is, I like reading about these things, kind of protect myself, so I don't end up on the wrong side of these things, and don't bite off more than I can chew. And it's a novel. It's good guys and bad guys. So that's my recommended. Richard.
You know, I had not heard of that one. I've read several of James Swain's books, and so I will check that out. I remember one time he's a friend of Steve Forte's, and I remember he convinced Steve Forte to come on a morning TV show with him one time, like something like Good Morning America or something like that. I don't know, but I remember thinking, wow, how did he get Steve to go on TV to do this? But anyway, so I will check that out because I like his books. My recommended is an article I came across called 100 Tips for a Better Life. And it's a long link, so I'll just put it in the show notes. But it's just 100 things, and they're broken down into different categories from relationships, success, body, possessions, all different things. So a lot of them are just like, eh, who cares? But a lot of them I thought, oh, this was good to read. So, as I say, 100 Tips for a Better Life. I will make sure that there is a link in the show notes.
So it includes diet and exercise and all those kind of things.
Yep, and things about money, relationships, compassion, hazards, rationality. I mean, all kinds of different stuff.
Very good. All right. So we have a lot of questions left. And so we'll have another show like this in the near future. And we always welcome your questions. You can send it to gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. You can send it to either Richard or me in our personal email addresses if you have them. Richard has a Twitter account, RW Munchkin.
No, at RWM21.
I had the first three letters correct.
Yeah. There's a Facebook page too, facebook.com/gamblingwithanedge.
Good. So keep your questions coming and we'll answer them if we can. I'd like to keep this going for another 10 years if we can, but it's been a lot of fun. Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.